here with you and Ms. Rogers and Mr. Hunter to try to work out some of the stuff and language before. I'm not comfortable in acting on this, even conceptually, I guess, at this point. Now, let me see if some of the other committee members are thinking along the same way. Council.
Mr. Chairman, could you also add Mr. Fedenke?
Yes, if he's available.
And I would like to bring Julie McFarland. She wasn't able to stay.
Representative Bellamy.
Well, I think you should take some sense of the committee, because there's one section of this bill that I won't support under, no matter how it's written. And so, you know, I don't want to ask these people to do a lot of work and then come back and find out that there's no support for some of the sections.
And which section?
I cannot support the section dealing with the McLaren non-payment of, or non, or the ability to not be able to charge parents when their child is assigned to McLaren. The concept of what they're trying to do in the very first section, I totally agree with. I honestly think that there ought to be notice given immediately. I think this is one of the things that's happened to the juvenile court when the circuit judges took it over. Most of the circuit judges have no interest in juvenile court. It's become a technical thing. It has not become a thing that I find, that I like in terms of working with kids, discussing it. And I think this is one of the things we see of it, that it's all a matter of procedure now. Somewhere down the line, they find out their own money. So I agree in concept. The Second Amendment is what?
That's actually the second area. The third area is McLaren. The first area deals with retroactive state debt, and
well, and I will just honestly say that I don't believe in retroactive state debt. I think if you don't tell them up front soon that you shouldn't be able to go back and say, by the way. So the first two concepts I'm in support of, but I philosophically I will not be able to support the third one.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take the opportunity to point out at this time that, as noted in Mr. Hunter's testimony, there are not three concepts embodied in this bill, but 11. And I think we're going to find disagreement on all 11 concepts. We've been addressing, except perhaps the notice concept that Representative Bellamy has outlined, I think we're going to find disagreement between the agencies and legal aid per se on the rest of those concepts.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I certainly agree with your idea to form an ad hoc committee, that it sounds like there's a great deal of work yet to be done, and that perhaps if that organization could work on it before it comes back to this committee. I do support the major concepts I've heard. Some of the details I still have questions about, so I support that.
This is just a note to Ms. Rogers. If when you chat with Ms. McFarland to assist us in weighing the decision presented by the amendment that would relieve a parent of the obligation to pay for the period of time the kid is in McLaren, if you could ask Ms. McFarland if a parent is under an obligation to reimburse a county juvenile department for the time that the child is in detention, or if a parent is under an obligation to pay the cost of court-appointed counsel for a juvenile. My sense is that a parent is not. And so, at least in terms of argument for purposes of consistency, although it's contrary, I think, to the position of Representative Bellamy, if she could respond to those two questions, it's not a drafting, but just for further information for discussion.
I'll communicate that.
Representative Buck, did you want to comment on the policy of relieving parental responsibility of reimbursing the state for when their child is at McLaren?
I don't have strong feelings either way on these.
Okay. Well, we will, and I can check with you folks on the progress of how we're going, so we'll put off further work session on 2468. We have one other bill on work session, House Bill 2651. Thank you very much for being with us this afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, we heard this bill on March 27th. This is at the request of Bob King from the Mental Health Association, the Mental Health Program Director. He had some amendments, and in your hand engrossed bill will be 2651-2. I apologize for the copy of the hand engrossed bill. We also had Ted Falk, an attorney in Portland, who wanted to conform a certain language with the federal language of 42 CFR, which is the Code of Federal Regulations. His amendments are 2651-3. And there's also some amendments by Carla Michelson of the Juvenile Rights Project, and their amendments are 2651-1. If Mr. Chairman would like, I could explain very briefly the three amendments.
Okay.
2651-1, the Juvenile Rights Project Amendments, deal with under what conditions the parents of a minor should be notified that the minor is going through mental health counseling. And the mental health program could only disclose information to the parents only after informing the minor that they were going to indeed contact the parents. The second set of amendments are from Dr. Bob King. They're very, very comprehensive. They would expand the bill to deal with drug and alcohol abuse counseling. And the last set of amendments, 2651-3, the Falk amendments, would be conforming language with 42 CFR, Code of Regulations, to ensure that this would not interfere with any federal program dealing with drug and alcohol treatment. And as you see from the hand-engrossed version of the bill, there is some overlap of amendments, and that is one reason I put them all together, even though they came out kind of sloppy.
Thanks a lot. Representative Buck.
Mr. Chairman, I have several things. The first, on Section 4, I'd like to provide a bit of legislative intent. That section says that a person providing these services without parental consent is not subject to civil liability. And I would like, if the committee concurs, as a part of legislative intent, to make it clear that there's not liability due to failure to obtain consent, but there would be liability for normal negligence.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
I think that perhaps we'd want to clarify that in the statute.
Yeah, or either reword that, or through this method of putting on the record our intent. Although
I think you could put in language something like, a person shall not be subject to any civil liability for providing solely for the reason that such diagnosis or treatment was provided without the consent of the parent or legal guardian of the minor. Does that sound pretty consistent?
Yeah.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, my second is a frustration with the bill. And I've been wrestling with this bill because I think there's a really important attempt to solve a problem, but let me express my concern if I might. I wouldn't have any problem if you could do it with defining practically emancipated children, which means for all practical purposes they're away from home 14 to 18, and saying those people can come for treatment without parental consent. And I think it's important that they be able to do that. I have a very, very strong concern that when there is a home situation, that a loving parent could be involved with their children, dealing with the frustrations and working with their children, and during the entire process of their treatment and involvement with mental health in no way be brought in. And lest a person say that wouldn't happen if they were loving parents, there are too many examples of people dealing with a person outside of the family setting where they make judgments that go counter to that family concern. The declaration clause in this bill is great. It says we've got problems with suicide, we've got alcohol problems, we've got drug abuse problems, and therefore we need to do something. But the something done is far broader than dealing with those issues. It's saying any 14-year-old to 18-year-old can get mental health or emotional help care without any involvement by their parents at all. And it goes on to say, we will provide at the earliest possible time parental involvement consistent with the clinical requirements of the minor. I have no idea what clinical requirements of the minor mean. And I may be standing out here totally by myself on this issue, but I don't think help works very well for people that doesn't somehow involve in a positive way the family. And I don't in any way mean to get the flag and American pie and all this stuff into it, because that's not what I'm trying to do. But I am concerned that we keep the family an integral part of this process and make a firm commitment to it. So I guess two things I'd say. If we had a way of amending to make the emancipated, not legally, but practically emancipated child be able to get that help. And second, allow help for the child without family knowledge and consent initially, but require that the family be brought in at some point, then I could support the bill. Without that, I have to oppose it.
You would like a notice provision then?
Well, something that if a parent, and I look at myself as a parent and say, if I'm there, I want to be notified and somehow be able to participate in that process. And I believe there is a legitimate concern that if parents are brought in initially, it may do violence to the process. But it's not satisfactory to me to say we'll bring parents in if we can, consistent with clinical requirements. What that really, I believe, is designed to do is to be a stop, you know, to somehow meet that parental concern sufficiently enough to get the bill through. And I think the providers of this bill are absolutely concerned about a real problem, and they want to solve it, and they believe this is the best way to solve it. I just can't agree.
Can I ask Ms. Carter, if you could come forward, please? First, identify yourself for the record. I believe you're with the Community Mental Health Program Directors.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Alice McCarter. I'm the mental health director in Washington County, and I'm president of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Program Directors.
Could you turn the one microphone back here? Now, I don't know.
Now, do you want me to start again?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
You heard Representative Bunn's statement. Would you like to respond? And do you
yes.
think it's possible to draft something describing the two types of settings?
Yes, I would like to work with Representative Bunn about those two issues, because I think you bring up the two key issues here. First of all, there are two groups of minors under the age of 15. I say under the age of 15 because our present law allows 15-year-olds to seek treatment. without parental consent. But there are two groups, and those are the children who are practically emancipated, not legally emancipated, and they sometimes seek treatment. Second of all, there is a group of children who are with their parents and who are seeking treatment, and when they hear that their parents need to be involved in the treatment, then they choose not to go any further. Usually that's an initial phone call, and they ask what are the requirements, and when we tell them that they need to have their parents' consent, then that's the end of their contact. These children are usually either suicidal or have alcohol problems. The children with alcohol and drug problems tend to not want their parents to be involved because they generally have an alcoholic parent who is denying that as a problem in the family. So I think you raised two very good issues. Mental health treatment is usually of a child is usually not effective unless the environment that that child lives in, namely the family, is treated as a whole. So the mental health professionals would agree with you that for effective treatment, we need to get that family in there. We also need somehow to give that child enough time in treatment to see that he or she needs the family to be there in order to make any changes. So that's the dilemma, and I agree with you, it's a dilemma.
Council.
Can I ask a question, Ms. McCarter? Simple one. Ms. McCarter, as you see the bill, and as you understand Representative Bunn's question, would Representative Bunn's concepts have any effect on children who were sexually abused by their parents and remained living with their parents?
I think, as Dr. King testified, there are a small group of youngsters who will come to seek treatment who have been sexually abused, who do want to remain in their home and don't want to confront their parents about that. Now, that's sometimes they don't want to confront their parents about past abuse that is no longer continuing. And so they want to resolve those conflicts in their mind. They don't want to bring up the old issue with their parents again. That there is a small group of kids who we see who have that dilemma. And they are trying to seek treatment to resolve the issue in their mind on their own without their parents.
Representative Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I would just say on that, I think there may also be a valid exemption for the sexual abuse area to say that a child has a legitimate right where the abuse has been by a family member to somehow be able to get help without family member awareness. I think there's a fairly compelling basis for doing something like that. I just, you know, I'm not convinced that we have welded or melted the family concerns with the legitimate treatment concerns sufficiently in the family's present form.
Representative Bunn, I was going to suggest that you and Ms. McCarter and other representatives of her association try to get together and work out some of these things, and then when you're ready, I'm anxiously.
I'd be glad to do that. If you would contact my secretary.
Stan, when you do that, I would prefer that Section 1 be in front of, be it enacted.
I have that same
because
wish
then it
also.
Then it doesn't become part of the ORS. For the purposes of the bill, if it comes after being enacted, then it becomes part of the ORS.
I agree. Thank you, Representative Bell. Thank you for coming down here and spending the afternoon with us. We've had all kinds of weather outside, but we were waiting here. We have one more bill. It is a hearing. Is that right?
But let me point out, Representative, if you're speaking to 2874,
Yes.
In your absence, we did have that.
Oh,
there was only one witness who appeared. That was Representative Carter. She shared some written information with us. She also indicated that the Bureau of Labor and Industries, though they wished to take position on the record, they were unable to appear. However, they will forward information, which she indicated to us would be in support of the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other business to come before the committee? Are you sure?
Sit down.